Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of F This Movie. As we continue to celebrate Scary Movie Month, it's actually starting to wind down. My name is Patrick Bromley. I am joined tonight by Alex Lawson.
Hello. Hello.
Are you scared yet, Alex?
I'm really scared. I had something to ask you. I don't know if you may have even referenced this on another show at some point. Who is responsible for giving us our wonderful F This Movie theme music? Who composed that?
That is our friend Brad McCarty, recording under the name Smokey and Casper.
Oh, that's right. That's right. First of all, his name, very appropriate for this month.
Good point.
And secondly, I feel like maybe, gosh, far be it for me to be suggesting things for next Scary Movie Month, but I almost feel like there should be like a Scary Movie Month remix where there's like a wolf howl in there.
Oh, nice.
Maybe some like, I don't know, like some kind of organ.
Yeah, maybe we could just get him to re-record the whole thing like on the theremin. If you like our theme song or if you're a fan of electronic music, he's a super talented musician. There's actually a link at the bottom of our website, fthismovie.blogspot.com, where it says F This Movie theme music composed by and performed by Smokey and Casper. If you click on that link, it'll take you to his page and you can hear more of his stuff. But what a great segue into dropping the name of our website, F This Movie.
Also, I would have known the answer to that question all if I ever visited our website. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding around.
Fthismovie.blogspot.com, Facebook.com/fthismovie, Twitter.com/fthismovie, DVDverdict@DVDverdictPresents.com. And of course, you can find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie, where you can hear all 80 plus of our shows. Like I said at the beginning, Scary Movie Month continues at F This Movie, and that means that the F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge 2 is in full swing. We have actually cracked 300 entries into the F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge 2. You'll remember, if you've been listening, that we originally planned on getting to 150. So we've more than doubled our goal, which we can only say thank you to the many, many people who have contributed and have been so awesome. It's been so much fun to read these and read them on the show. It's been a ton of fun. This can only mean that next year, of course, we have to get to like 500 or 600, which is a ton of pressure, but let's keep our sights.
It sets the future bar very high.
Absolutely.
They said it couldn't be done. I don't know who they are, but I'm sure somebody was saying it when you first laid down the gauntlet of
Definitely.
The 150 barrier, and we just, you know, smoked that shit.
You know who said it couldn't be done?
Who's that?
Haters.
All the haters that live in the bowels of the internet.
Yeah, which reminds me of this thing that my uncle once said to me. Haters be hatin'. Let's read some of the entries in the F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge 2. Like Carl Wonders, who says, "The Human Centipede, is it possible to unwatch a movie?" Something we all thought after seeing
Oh yeah,
The Human Centipede. I have not yet seen Human Centipede 2, although I did notice that it's available on demand for those of you braver than I.
Because when you demand to watch The Human Centipede 2, I mean, who are they to deny you?
Like, yeah.
I mean, who's going to deny you of that? I have a good one.
All right.
And this is apropos, given the most recent podcast, although now I feel full disclosure, I haven't actually listened to the most recent American Psycho podcast, but
okay. There
is, did you already read there is an entry, one of the more recent entries.
I don't think so.
Is about American Psycho. This is from Heath Holland. And he said, "American Psycho, great documentary about exercise and skincare," which is pretty.
Once again, we have to give mad props to Heath Holland, who has just been crushing it on the Scary Movie
Challenge. He really
is. The man is a maniac. He watches perhaps more scary movies than any of us and writes very entertaining 7-word reviews. I guess I forgot to say that since there's still time to participate in the Scary Movie Challenge. Anytime you watch a scary movie in the month of October, go to fthismovie.blogspot.com and find the F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge 2 and write a 7-word review. Like this one from Will Trax, who says, "Jason X, space. Really? Space? Know what? Fuck this." And I have to read another one from Heath Holland because I loved it.
Go for it.
"Jason Lives, Friday the 13th, Part 6. Thoughtful, inspiring, and subtle. A real tearjerker."
This one yeah, it's good. This one comes to us from I Love Movies, and it is appropriate for what we're discussing this evening. I just came across this. It is Hostel. Very simple, to the point. Oh my God, I'm going to puke.
Sarah D says, "Let me in. It doesn't pay to be a bully."
And you guys, was it you and JB who did a podcast about Let Me In and Let the Right One In?
Yes, last year. Yes, you can you can search it in iTunes and listen to our podcast from a year ago. JB, very anti Let Me In. Me, not so much. It's actually a movie that that I like more now than I did when I first saw it. Again, still not comparable to the original, but few remakes are. Steve G says, "Red State. Bad news, Kevin Smith, you slightly overpaid," which is brilliant if you know the whole backstory to Red State, in which Kevin Smith bought his own movie for like a dollar or something.
Amen to that. There's a whole agenda there that I'd rather not even dip into.
Yeah.
Glorious occasion. Let me see. I'm sure I can find another one. Here's one. I always love when people submit the 7-word reviews that are clearly bent on spoiling the movie. Those are some of my favorite ones. So this is, if you want to like turn off, if you want to mute the podcast for the next 20 seconds, this is a spoiler alert for What Lies Beneath. Cheating husband killed by the girl he murdered.
Yeah,
killed by girl he murdered. Excuse me. It is still within the 7-word limit. That is from Lori.
Yeah, I think that actually might have been read on the American Psycho podcast because.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Well,
Doug. Doug and Lori have a whole thing going on that we are not privy to. But I here's another one from Lori, a more recent one. Psycho. Stop at the Bates Motel. Get murdered.
Well, then Lori very clearly has. I'm sorry for double dipping there, but that one just really stood out to me and was. I mean, I'm sure Lori is somewhere glowing with pride that she said two of the same submission read on different podcasts. But that's a fantastic submission, and I really do appreciate sort of what she's after there. It's nice.
Spoiling the end of the movie. Jessica says, "Waxwork, Gremlins guy, wax hand survives, Q sequel." Bill Murphy says of the remake of The Thing from 2011, one of my favorites, "No, no, 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 no." Read a couple more, like this one from Kathy, who is another person who's been kicking some ass. And I really like this one about The Relic. She wrote it sort of like a singles ad or something. The Relic, lonely monster seeking head. Tonight, the museum. Very, very clever.
I have one from Joel, I like this one because I wasn't even – this is one of those movies that you wouldn't even necessarily color as a scary movie, but his review definitely sold me on it. The movie is Return to Oz, and the the review is scarier at 30 than at age 5, which
I would agree with that, but that's pushing it a little. I don't know if that counts as a horror movie.
I don't think it does either, but that doesn't preclude me from really enjoying his assessment of the movie.
It doesn't mean the movie isn't horrifying. Here's the last one I'll read, which is another extremely clever one. Again, I like these ones where you really have to know the movie to get the joke. Adam says, "American Werewolf in London. Spoiler alert, you never see Debbie Klein." And then he does a funny face. Which is great. Again, if you don't get it, go see American Werewolf in London. It's a fantastic movie.
By all means.
Yeah. So thank you everybody for writing in to the F Scary Movies Challenge 2. Please continue to do so for the last few days in October. Let's see just how far past 300 we can get. I think 400 is out of reach, but I don't think 350 is, so we'll see. Alex, have you seen anything scary lately?
I have. I saw a movie recently in the movie theater, actually.
Get out of town.
I won't. I'm going to stay in town, and I'm going to tell you about the movie I saw.
All right.
It was at E Street Cinema in downtown Washington, D.C., where I live. While it's definitely not what you would probably exclusively label a scary movie, I don't know if we'll ever feature it on a Scary Movie Month podcast.
Okay.
It definitely was very psychologically affecting, and it And on top of all of that, it is one of the best movies I've seen this year, so I felt compelled to talk about it.
All right.
And it is Jeff Nichols, I believe, is the director's name, and the movie is called Take Shelter.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Michael Shannon movie?
Exactly, the Michael Shannon movie. It stars Michael Shannon and Jessica Chastain, who is in Tree of Life. And, boy, I tell you what, I mean, I remember seeing the trailer like a couple of months ago on the internet, and I think it was like making the rounds on like the film festival circuit or something, and it just recently popped into this theater near me, and I went and saw it, and boy, it is just really, really great. It takes a really sort of simple idea and a really simple trope that you see in a lot of fiction. That is the template of the sort of like village crazy person, like the person who shows up to like city council meetings and starts screaming crazy stuff about the end of the world, and actually gives that person a backstory and a reason for what he does. It deals with like all these sort of apocalyptic visions. The visuals are really great. Like I said, it's not like an out and out horror movie, but the times when it's scary, it's really goddamn scary.
Yeah.
And Michael Shannon is terrific. I don't know the status of its like release. I don't know how wide it's gone or is going to be, but if it comes to your area, Take Shelter is really, really worth a look.
Would you say like, don't take shelter from Take Shelter? Was that like your crappy Gene Shalit review?
I really can't even compute that. No, yeah, no, I, it's, yeah, no. I,
always
no,
be, th- it's always been... be, always be blurbin. That's what I say.
Absolutely.
ABB, always be blurbin.
Now at the risk of you know, sort of taxing you, yeah. You've obviously watched more than your share, more than anyone's share of scary movies during these last few weeks. Have you seen anything new and scary that you care to?
I saw something in theaters, a little movie that is getting a very wide release called Paranormal Activity 3.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
Now we did a podcast about the first Paranormal Activity.
Well, kind of, yeah, we did
in conjunction with the Blair Witch Project last year.
Yes, and I just recently saw Paranormal Activity 2 for the first time because it's available on Netflix Instant. And
I never saw that one.
Yeah, I was not really a fan. I thought there was sort of one good moment in it, and mostly it was bad. I liked Paranormal Activity 3 as much as you can like a movie like that. I mean, you know, I'm sure in the podcast coming up about Hostel, we're going to talk about like this idea of torture porn, which is that, you know, there's no story, there's no characters, it just exists to show horrible graphic punishment and violence. And I don't subscribe to that idea. Paranormal Activity is sort of, I guess you could, you know, if you were going to be dismissive, you would call it like scare porn, because there's not really a story. There's barely characters. It's just every few minutes there's a loud noise and you jump out of your seat. And so it's not so much a movie as it is like this sort of haunted house thing. It's very effective at what it is. The audience with which I saw the movie opening weekend was very wound up. Nervous sort of laughter for the entire movie, loud, long screaming at a lot of the jump scares. And I mean, that sort of adds to the fun of it. Sure. It's just not a movie that like necessarily stays with you. I think they do a good job with it. And these are the two cats that did Catfish, actually. And so I was curious to see what sort of a narrative movie from them would be like. And they do some very clever things in the movie. Some of the scares that they orchestrate, you're like, wow, that's very clever. I don't want to give any of them away, obviously, because it's a new movie people are going to see it. But there's some interesting sort of diversion things that they do where you're positive that one thing is going to happen and something else happens.
Oh, that's cool.
So, again, if you're into sort of that kind of a thing, just a movie that's basically somebody yelling boo behind you every couple of minutes, I think it's very effective. I would never say it's a good movie, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. I want to ask you something. One thing that bugged me about the first one, which is the only one that I've seen, and we discussed this on the podcast a year ago, I didn't necessarily really like that, you know, the ghost that was inhabiting the home of this young couple at the time was just a couple. Yeah. I know, and then like in the second one there was like a family. It was like the girl's sister or something. Isn't that how it works?
Yeah.
And then basically what I'm trying to say is that I didn't like that, like, the ghost was, spoiler alert, I guess, for Paranormal Activity, it had like an agenda, like it had, right, sort of been stalking her since she was like a little girl.
Right.
And I, from at least from what I could glean from this, from the trailer for Paranormal Activity 3, like, it was all about sort of looping back around to that. Is that something that you just sort of come to kind of deal with? Because that really rubbed me the wrong way. I really like Paranormal Activity outside of all that, like, yeah, the ghost has an agenda stuff.
I mean, yes and no, because, yeah, while I agree that one of the weakest things about the series is this need to sort of create a mythology, and 3 certainly deals with some of that in that it goes back to when they were kids, but yeah. But I would also suggest that it has no interest really in the mythology. In fact, it changes some of it. It adds new things that they've never talked about. And it's so not really important that, like, there's a ghost haunting Katie, whatever, Featherston as a girl. Because if you didn't know that this was sort of a prequel to 2 other movies, aside from this short little video introduction, it would just be about a ghost that's haunting this house in the 1980s. You know, it actually has very little. While it technically is building on the mythology, it really isn't in any meaningful way. So,
yeah, I guess. Oh, I mean, I guess I didn't realize that it, outside of, like you said, apparently there's like an intro or something. It takes place like fully in the past.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess my question is then answered, because then it really doesn't. Yeah, at least on its face, it wouldn't really bother you. Because,
yeah, it's not. It's really not about.
It's, well, not referencing the other things explicitly. It's
not about answering questions or dealing with specific things that are referenced in the first 2 movies. It's just.
Oh, okay.
She mentions, you know, at one point that they were haunted as girls, and this kind of shows that. But again, if you took out that video intro, you would have no idea that this had anything to do with the other movies necessarily, which I guess is a positive, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, that's good.
Let's talk Eli Roth's Hostel and Hostel Part 2.
That's right. We're doing both, because, yeah, I mean, this was my suggestion to you.
Yes.
And I originally sort of wanted to just do the first one, Hostel.
Mm-hmm.
But then I sort of thought about it more, and I realized that I have really stark views and like distinct opinions on both movies, and it's sort of hard to talk about just one of them without talking about what came after.
Right.
And it just seemed the most appropriate. Now, this is not. Now, I know you and I think it was Doug did Cabin Fever on a podcast. Boy, correct. In the infancy of that.
In the early days, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was could have been one of the first like 10 or 15 we ever did.
Yeah.
And I can't remember if you had even mentioned Hostel at that point. But
I'm guessing we did, but I don't know for sure.
Probably, yeah. Well, anyway, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I guess the fairest place to start would just be, did you have any sort of preconceived you know, opinion of Hostel, and did it change on this viewing for this podcast?
I mean, I liked Hostel when I saw it. I went into Hostel, you know, hoping to like it, even though it didn't necessarily interest me all that much, because I was a fan of Cabin Fever, because
yes,
I liked Eli Roth just as a guy. And I know even that's sort of a controversial statement, because I think he's one of these guys that, especially nowadays, tends to overshadow his own work, in that people have such strong opinions about him that sort of colors their feelings about his movies. Just like, oh, he talks too much, he's too out in front, you know, he's too much of a salesman, blah blah blah. I don't like him, and therefore I don't like his movies.
Yeah.
But I did like him as a guy. He's just a huge horror geek, and he really wants to celebrate making horror movies. And that
a man after your own heart. He's a man after your own heart.
Because, you know, there are certainly a lot of filmmakers that are sort of ghettoized in the horror genre, and a lot of them seem to sort of resent it, but not Eli Roth. He really kind of celebrates it. And I was a Cabin Fever fan, and I wanted to see his next movie. I liked Hostel. There are certainly things about it that I don't like, but I remember feeling at the time, and again, it came sort of – it was on that sort of big ride up towards this whole torture porn idea, part of the Saw franchise and these other movies that really sort of reveled in, you know, graphic violence or whatever. And I have always maintained that I thought Hostel was sort of the best possible version of that movie, that it was actually, for the most part, kind of restrained. While it's certainly violent, and there are scenes that I think go too far, and I guess we'll get to those more when we start to spoil the movie. But I always felt like it was – I thought it was better than I expected it to be. It was a different movie from Cabin Fever, which I liked. And I thought it had some things to say about the horror genre. And then we get to Hostel 2, and I have to say I was disappointed that Eli Roth's third movie was another Hostel movie. He's basically made Cabin Fever and two Hostel movies, and that's not super interesting to me. He felt like he needed to sort of expand on the, again, this mythology. I wish, you know, that these horror movies wouldn't be so caught up in mythology, but he needed to expand sort of the universe of the Hostel series. And I think I've said this before. I know Doug and I have had this conversation personally. I'm guessing we said it on the Cabin Fever podcast, but it's such a great example of like a sequel that – this is the line that I've always used. It's a sequel that learned all the wrong lessons from the original film.
Okay.
All of the things that I could point to and say the traps that the movie, the original, avoided falling into – I think the sequel falls into. I think he thought that maybe people liked a bunch of different things from the original Hostel, and so he did more of that in the sequel, and it pushed in the opposite direction that I wanted it to go.
Yeah.
What's your take on the original or the sequel or both?
Yeah, my thoughts are very similar to yours. I know. Very boring. But they are. And I remember, gosh, the first one came out in 2005, right?
I believe.
And I think early 2000, like I think I remember seeing it in like January.
Yeah, it was a January release.
Which is so weird. Like, yeah. I don't know how this movie doesn't come out in October, but anyway. So, I mean, I was 19 years old when I saw this movie, and like you, I remember hearing a lot about it. I remember hearing, you know, that like the sort of hype machine gets behind a movie like this and sort of like plays up a lot of what you're going to see and how it's so intense and so disturbing. And so I was kind of prepared for that. And then when I saw it in the theater, my goodness, I was just really blown away by how I did not expect the word suspense to like immediately jump to my mind when I saw Hostel, and it has jumped to my mind every time I've watched it. I would say, like, I would go so far as to say that I think the first Hostel is a really good to, if you catch me on the right day, like really great horror movie. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, like, it is in my regular October rotation. I watch it every year. And I feel like it just has a lot more respect for the audience than I thought a movie like that would have, mm-hmm. which I guess if you're measuring it against certain expectations, you know, you can make an argument that it's only as good as, you know, measuring against what you thought it was going to be. But in the first Hostel, you have probably about a good like 20 to 23 minutes in a movie that's, you know, not even an hour and a half long or something. So that that represents a large chunk of its running time. You have a good, like, you know, 20 to, you know, 23 minutes or so where nothing actually gross or scary really happens.
Mm-hmm.
There's like some creepy sort of tonal things, which is to be expected, but there's not like an out and out scare until a very specific moment, like over 20 minutes into the film, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it really sort of allows you to, and I'm not going to say that these characters in the first Hostel are like the most profound and, you know, deep characters that have ever graced the silver screen or anything, but it does sort of allow you to, for lack of a better term, considering sort of that they're just hanging out in Europe, you just sort of hang out with them for a while.
Right.
And I actually like that a lot. And furthermore, I like that it employs a little bit about it, or rather it employs a little bit of the psycho technique to a lesser extent, maybe, but
right, definitely.
In that you spend the time with the character Josh, played by Eric Christensen, is that the actor's name?
Derek Richardson,
so close.
You're confusing him with Erik Christian Olsen, his co-star from Dumb and Dumberer
Yeah. I knew there was some connection there. So yeah, Derek Richardson as Josh. And like, they legit fooled me the first time I saw it. Like, I thought he was the protagonist.
Right. Well, yeah, because every other movie you've seen has set you up to believe that he's going to be the guy.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, then, you know, certain things transpire, which.
Well,
we're
going to be getting into spoilers for Hostel, everybody. So if you haven't seen Hostel and certainly Hostel Part 2, tune out, or if you don't care to have them spoiled, then keep listening. But we're going to be spoiling these movies.
Yeah, I'm sorry to be doing it sort of so in the early going here. Oh, that's kind of right. It kind of plays into why I like the movies so much. And then, you know, so after Josh is, you know, sort of taken away from us, we then sort of do a pivot to the other character played by Jay Hernandez, mm-hmm. Paxton. And then while I already appreciate the pivot that has happened, I even further appreciate the fact that we kind of, save for a few key scenes, we know about as much as Jay Hernandez does for like a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And again, while it's not a great role and he's not a great actor, I think he does a really admirable job of kind of selling this feeling of kind of desperation, mm-hmm. and hopelessness of being really far away from home and just doesn't know where his friend is. And that sort of plays to like what the visceral nature of the first movie is about, more so than any of the disgusting torture stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more the feeling of like isolation and you know, just like sort of that crippling fear of I don't know what's going to happen to me next. Mm-hmm. And it has always struck me, and it strikes me every time I watch it. I think it's really, really well executed, and I feel like it really doesn't – I feel like it's come to be known – I feel like it's still sort of known by the conventional thought that it was known by before it was even released, that it's just like this – you know, like you said, we'll probably be saying this a lot, but just like one of these torture porn movies, which – and I think it really transcends that.
It does, because, you know, it to some extent it has something to say about – torture, or it doesn't exist just to show violence, because the violence is part of sort of the narrative and what the movie is about. You know, you had said that we get to hang out with the characters and they're certainly not well-rounded or whatever, and that's by design, you know, that Eli Roth kind of set out to write two, at least, particularly, sort of just arrogant, kind of obnoxious frat boy kind of Americans,
yeah,
who are outside of their own home country but still treat it like it's a playground, and who don't necessarily have much respect for where they are. And yet when the situation turns and they're sort of captured and they're being tortured for someone else's amusement, we do still, I think, care about their plight. While they're not necessarily super likable characters in the beginning, I think we still feel for them and their situation. And I think even that is a turn on, you know, what we're used to in horror movies, because you got to remember, for a long time, horror movies were basically just, you know, let's say Friday the 13th or any Halloween sequel or whatever, where it was just these cardboard idiotic characters being killed off. And we didn't necessarily feel for them at all. And so this movie kind of at least turns that around a little bit and asks you to consider the violence that's being perpetrated against these characters and who it's for, because horror movies have always sort of reveled in dismemberment or disfigurement, just, you know, violence and murder. That's one of the reasons why horror fans go to horror movies. But, you know, this movie certainly shows those things in graphic detail, but it never is necessarily saying like this is wrong, but, you know, it's saying whose enjoyment is this for? Is it for the guy who paid $50,000 to torture and kill an American? Or is it you in the audience who paid $8 to come watch it? I don't think it's to the extent that like a movie like Funny Games necessarily makes the audience, you know, implicit in this kind of violence. But I think it's certainly there. And so to call it torture porn, it, again, is so dismissive. And it's one of those things where it's like, I think, you know, it's a way of someone to dismiss the movie without having to see it. It's like, I don't want to see
it. Oh, yeah.
Because most of them haven't. It's like, I would never watch that. It's just torture porn. Well, A, you don't know what you're talking about because you haven't seen it. And B, you know, I don't think it's fair to dismiss, you know, an entire genre. You know, it's certainly one little sort of subcategory within the horror genre, but it's like, it's like writing off all of music because you don't like the Beach Boys or something. It's like, no, this is just one kind of thing. And it's like, that's fine if that's not for you, but I don't think you have the right to say, like, it's torture porn and therefore it shouldn't be seen. I don't know. I just, you know, that's just kind of ignorant. Because, yeah, there are certainly, I talked about, and again, you haven't heard it, and that's okay, but on the American Psycho podcast, I talked about this movie Captivity, which kind of came out in the wake of Saw and Hostel. And... Yeah. While I won't necessarily say that's torture porn because I just don't like that label, it's the closest I've seen because there's no context for it. There's nothing. It's just it introduces you to a girl and then it starts making you watch her like drink liquid eyeballs and all this awful stuff. Hostel has a context for all the things that happen and it gives a reason. I think the whole thing has a weight, you know, that I think the people that dismiss it don't acknowledge.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I feel like there is sort of a layered message that you're talking about, wherein the joke is sort of on you, the audience, in you know, sort of a subtle or not very subtle way, however you care to look at it. Conversely, I didn't stray into Hostel Part 2 yet, and I would agree with your sentiments on that as well. That in addition to not having, even if you want to make the argument that it also makes that same sort of assertion, at the very best, it's repetitive, and at the very worst, it's like really, I would argue that movie is actually very, like, mean-spirited and kind of ugly in a way that is even uglier than the actual things you're seeing on the screen. And I'll talk about that a little bit more. But one of my big hang-ups with the second iteration of Hostel is something that I was reminded of a phenomenon that you and Mike discussed when you were actually doing the Star Wars prequel podcast, and just sort of a general complaint that a lot of people have about the Star Wars prequels in general, even though Hostel 2 isn't a prequel. It sort of serves the same... It serves the same function, and I think you know what I'm about to say. Like, one of the other things that really works about the first one is this horrid, just frightening operation that these kids get mixed up in is so shrouded in mystery, and it's just sort of frightening in its anonymity and its like overall reach. The police are in on it; they have seemingly sort of, you know, limitless resources and all that. And it seems like no matter where you turn, you're not really safe until you just like get on a train and get the hell out, which is exactly what happens at the end of Hostel. But then, of course, like almost from the opening minutes of Hostel 2, you are served with this, I don't know, with this like, you know, behind the curtain view of like
who the
faces are behind this operation.
Right.
I can think of a very specific example of when like Hostel 2 started to go wrong for me. In Hostel Part 1, when the guys check into the titular hostel, there's like a sort of creepy and funny guy who checks them in. You know what I'm talking about? He's that guy with the glasses and he has that kind of funny voice.
Yeah.
And he's kind of vaguely creepy, but he's not really overtly scary.
Right.
And you know, with the hindsight, after Hostel plays out, you know that by the nature of the operation that he was in on it. But you don't even think about it when you first see him. One of the first things you see him do in Hostel Part 2 is like go to an underground chamber in the hostel and start scanning in these girls' passports to be like emailed out to people who will bid, and it just sort of starts all of the behind the scenes stuff that I really don't care about because I don't care about seeing like what makes it go. I just know that it's big and scary and largely anonymous. And that one little moment where that guy who I knew was creepy and I knew was kind of in on it, you know, as soon as they like go out of their way to show you exactly what his role in it is, I was just like, well, you know, it's interesting, I guess, but just it's not nearly as entertaining as just sort of watching it play out as a blank slate.
I agree with what you're saying. I'm almost kind of torn on the matter because I think having seen the first movie, if he had just sort of I don't think he could pull off the trick of it being mysterious and vague and foreign again, because we've seen the first movie. And so we don't have that same sense of displacement when we sit down to see Hostel 2, but at the same time, I agree with what you're saying. So on the one hand, I'm like, okay, yeah, maybe take me behind the scenes and show me just how this process works. And it's interesting that, you know, it's so sort of disassociated from what's actually happening. It's like, it's the logistics of this thing that you sort of forget ends in a horrible murder. So that's kind of interesting, but I agree with what you're saying that, like, yeah, I don't need to see how the sausage is made, you know. I don't need to know that it's midichlorians, or I don't need to know.
Yeah.
I always talk about The Ring, that The Ring is super scary when they watch that video because it's all these bizarre images that have nothing to do with one another. But then I'm talking about the American remake. Then they spend the rest of the movie explaining each and every image on the video, and it's like, well, now it's no longer scary. And Hostel 2 is sort of explaining all the images on the video. And so I agree with that. You know, the one thing that I like, I don't know, Hostel 2, I'm so torn on because, again, like you said, I totally agree that it's mean-spirited, it's ugly, it's repetitive in a lot of ways because it's just, let's do the first Hostel, but this time it's girls. And again, it's more violent.
Not only is it more violent, it like, I feel like it goes out of its way to be more decadent in like the way that the people are dispatched with, yeah, in a way that I think is inconsistent with like the universe they set up in the first one. I'll talk about it more specifically, but I don't want to cut your.
I think I know exactly what you're referencing, which is I was thinking the same thing as I rewatched it. It reminds me, and again, I haven't seen Human Centipede 2 yet, but a lot of what I've heard is that the movie is insanely, horribly, offensively violent, and the first movie, while horrific in concept, really wasn't. You saw the first movie, it's like, well, that was positively restrained based on what I had in my mind. And Hostel is sort of the same way. Again, I think the only scene in the original Hostel that, to me, goes way too far is the Asian girl that Paxton saves has her eye dangling from its socket, and that in and of itself is horrific, but then Paxton has to sort of cut it out and it gushes this weird pussy fluid. And I know that Eli Roth, who sort of loves gore, he refers to that, I think, as the eyegasm. I know that that's a moment that he's very proud of. And to me, that is so out of tone with the rest of the movie, which I feel like does sort of show violence, but I feel like sort of when it's necessary. That was the moment that it seemed most gratuitous to me. And without that moment, I would say actually the violence throughout the movie is pretty effective.
Yeah.
Hostel 2 is a lot of eyegasms. But the one thing that I like in theory about Hostel 2 is that he approaches it from the at least partially from the perspective of customers. The Roger Bart character and the other actor's name.
He's not
Richard Berge is his name.
Yeah, there you go.
He's in a ton of stuff. That they're sort of these American customers who pay to, you know, kill people and sort of what that process is like. I don't necessarily mean the logistics, but I mean who are the people that would do such a thing. That to me is sort of an interesting question, and I don't think the movie ever answers it. And what few answers it does provide, I think, are very simplistic. I think to say that Roger Bart is sort of this henpecked husband who therefore wants to torture and murder this young girl as a way of getting back at his nagging wife, that he's been emasculated and this somehow gives him power. I mean, okay, but to me that's just the most sort of shitty, obvious motivation for having him do it. And Richard Berge doesn't even necessarily have one, except that, like, he's this guy who wants to
he's just like an ultra alpha male type
who wants to experience everything. And then again, even the movie is so sort of obvious in the way that it resolves both of those characters, that he eventually doesn't have the stomach for it. He's just been this big walking cock for the whole movie. He's all confidence and swagger, and he chickens out. Whereas Roger Bart, who was like meek and you think nice, turns out to be the really sadistic prick. I will say the one thing I do like about these movies, and then we'll get back to what you wanted to say about the violence, especially in the second movie. You know, what they are basically in a lot of ways is sort of an update on, like, The Most Dangerous Game. And what's interesting about that is, you know, it's sort of the logical conclusion or extension of The Most Dangerous Game for the times that we live in. Like, The Most Dangerous Game is about these guys, you know, this guy who's a hunter who has hunted and killed everything he can think of. And so now it's like, oh, how about humans? You know, wouldn't that be great sport? And that Hostel is sort of an extension of that, except now we're so lazy and shitty that, like, we're not interested in the sport of it.
Yeah, no, there's no hunt. That's why I think it's so funny that the group is actually called Elite Hunting.
Right.
And there's actually no hunting. I don't know if that's some kind of, like, a reference to, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's a reference to something or just, like, kind of a lazy name, but.
That the animals are brought to you to kill. It reminds me of that whole, like, when Dick Cheney had his hunting accident, as I make air quotes, where it came out after the fact that, like, he was shooting these birds, but essentially they were in cages and released moments before he shot them. And it's like, well, that's not hunting. That's just, you know, shooting at something that someone has caught for you. And that's exactly what's going on in the two Hostel movies. And I don't know if that's deliberate on the part of Eli Roth, but I did think it was worth noting.
Yeah, no, well, it's definitely worth noting. And, well, even before I make the point that I was going to make about the difference in the two movies as regards to violence, mm-hmm. I did want to address, while I agree in theory with you that the question that the second Hostel seeks to answer in terms of who are the type of people who would do this, again, for me, I feel like the first one with that great brief scene with Jay Hernandez and Rick Hoffman, mm-hmm. like, says all of it. It said all I could ever want to know about that. Rick Hoffman is, like, on another goddamn planet of insanity in that scene. And that is obviously a question that leaps to your mind. It's like, who are these people that would do this?
Right.
And, you know, you get the, you get a little bit of, like, you know, who would do it in the realm of the, I think he's just known within the first one as the Dutch businessman,
right?
Who sort of first encounters them on the train, and, you know, he gets his comeuppance later, but he is sort of, but that doesn't really answer, because he's sort of like being a scary guy,
right?
Whereas, like, they go out of their, you know, the you know, Eli Roth clearly sets this scene between Jay Hernandez and Rick Hoffman. You know, behind the scenes, they're in, like, the locker room or wherever it is you change into your skivvies to go, like, you know, kill these people. And he's just, like, this really amped up American businessman who, like, you know, sex isn't enough for him, cars aren't enough for him, and he's just really dedicated to the idea of taking another life. And that's all that I ever needed to know about who would ever do that. And therefore, that whole story with Roger Bart and Richard Berge, while ambitious and maybe a good thought, just leaves me, like, I'm just really numb to it, because its whole purpose has sort of already been kind of voided for me. before I even move on, what were your thoughts? Like, it's my opinion that that scene with Rick Hoffman in the first one is like one of the most affecting in the movie. And it's kind of funny. And then when you catch yourself laughing at it, you're like, well, that's really fucked up. And
he definitely goes so far over the top that it is kind of comedic. I think it's an effective scene. And like you said, I think it does answer a lot of those sort of questions, like who are these people? And it's good because Jay Hernandez so clearly is trying to get out of there.
Oh,
and so
God.
There's,
yeah.
There's some, you know, tension involved. I do think that's a good scene. Again, I think Hostel, I don't know necessarily that I think it's a great movie, but I do think it's a good horror movie that benefits from being better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And Hostel 2, you know, again, makes so many of the mistakes that the first movie avoided. And one of my overall problems, I think, with Hostel 2 is that it seems very pleased with itself.
I could not agree more. That really struck me on this viewing. I had only seen it, like I said, I watch Hostel every year. I have since it came out. I had only seen Hostel 2 once when I saw it in the theater, and this was the first time I rewatched it. And yeah, I agree. Continue. I don't want to cut your thoughts short, but I think I know.
I don't even know that I can necessarily elaborate, but it seems very pleased. You know, take the whole Roger Bart sort of comeuppance that he's this asshole man. The protagonist is this, you know, seemingly meek, defenseless girl. The tables are turned, and how is he dispatched? Well, how do you dispatch any man who, you know, that his masculinity becomes part of the problem, that that it's not about killing a human being for Roger Bart. It's about killing a woman. Because,
well, yeah, and you have touched on something that is one of my chief like problems with the second.
Because women, you know, because for him, women deserve to be killed. So, you know, how do you deal with this, you know, penis? Well, you just lop it off. And I feel like Eli Roth is so pleased with the gore of that effect.
Yeah.
But also sort of the poetic justice of it. And it's just, it's one of these things. It's like, oh gosh, that's just so fucking obvious, you know? And like, so ham-fisted. Things like that, I guess, to me stand out as being just very sort of self-satisfied. And what sort of confirms that is that I remember at the time, the movie didn't do so hot. You know, the first movie came out in January, like you said, and made a bunch of money and took people by surprise. I mean, it made like almost $30 million, between $20 and $30 million its opening weekend. And everybody was like, oh my God, this movie came out of nowhere and made a bunch of money because the budget was very low.
Yeah,
Hostel 2, obviously they spent way more money. It came out in the middle of summer, which, you know, Eli Roth may not have had any control over. That could have been Lionsgate saying, let's, you know, we're a player. And the movie kind of tanked. And at the time, Eli Roth really blamed a lot of that on illegal downloads, that so many people had downloaded Hostel 2 illegally that they weren't going to see it in the theater, and therefore the movie didn't make as much money as it should have. But you know, it never occurred to him, I guess, that he made an inferior movie and so people didn't go, you know. So I feel like he's not in touch with that movie's problems, and maybe that also speaks to its sort of self-satisfaction. But let's get to the whole violence and women issue in Hostel Part 2.
I really want to tread lightly here because I almost feel like coloring the second movie as like misogynistic almost makes me a misogynist because I am like implicitly saying that, you know, the violence against women is a bigger deal than the horrible violence against men. But if that's the case, then so be it. But like the bottom line is, like, I watch it and it makes me uncomfortable in a way that watching the first one doesn't make me uncomfortable. And it's not, and I don't think I'm a person who has like a really thin skin for that type of stuff. I mean, I've seen a lot of goddamn horror movies and I've seen a lot of fucked up shit. I was in Vietnam. But seriously, but I mean, they're like, on its face. I mean, like when I first started seeing like the there's even just the promotional poster, which I thought was a really cool poster. But as soon as I saw it, was like, oh boy. And it's what's the actor's name? Heather Matarazzo. Is that how you pronounce her name?
Wiener Dog. It's pronounced.
Oh, thank God. Well, closer than Eric Christensen or whatever the hell I said. Yeah, I mean, and she's just sort of bound and gagged and hanging upside down, and it just, you know, Hostile 2, just, I was like, oh boy, like, we are really treading into some, and I thought, like, okay, this is bold, like, to go in this direction, but at the end of the day, I just kind of can't shake, and I know, like, you know, we've already put out the spoiler alert, but, like, and I know that the women prevail and all that, but that doesn't take away from the really sort of perverse, like, sexual things that happen. Like, it's not enough, like, it wasn't enough to just kill people, but now, like, Roger Bart, like, is bound and determined to rape this girl before he kills her.
Right.
Like, that, as you said, and I mean, again, maybe that's all part of, like, the notion that he has to have that disgusting, you know, vengeance wrought upon him, but it still really bothers me.
Yeah.
And I'm not like a, I'm not like a Quaker, you know, I mean, I'm not like a person who's like out to be offended, not, you know, like, or anything like that, but it really does like affect me.
Well, the thing, I mean, Eli Roth, I think, is a smart guy, and I think he's smart.
I agree.
I think he's smart about horror films. And so while I agree with you that it is harder to watch what happens to the women in Hostel 2 than it is to watch what happens to the men in Hostel 1, there's a possibility that the movie, yes, is just sort of misogynist and trafficking in the same sort of violence against women that horror movies have done for decades. But part of me wonders, and I'm not necessarily giving Eli Roth credit for this, it could be true and it could not be true, that part of me wonders if some of that is deliberate, that if he is sort of asking you to, you know, making you sort of question your reaction to essentially the same premise. And if you do have a harder time with it, when it's women, why is that?
I couldn't agree more.
I don't know if that's deliberate or not, because again, I think for something like that to work, the two movies need to be more similar.
Yeah.
And they're not, because what happens to the girls in Hostel 2 is not comparable to what happens to the, I mean, again, they're both captured and tortured, but what happens to Wiener Dog in Hostel 2, and that's the movie that stands out, or the scene that stands out, I think that you're really
zeroing in on.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's the scene that has prevented me from rewatching Hostel Part 2. I've seen it maybe once or twice, and I
Remember how I said I had only seen it once? That was the only scene that I actually, like, actively remembered every frame of.
And that's why
I hadn't revisited it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I don't want to sit through it again. You know, Wiener Dog is stripped naked and hung upside down for a long time. A woman comes in and, like, sort of cuts her back with a scythe and then slits her throat in graphic detail and allows the blood to rush out of Wiener Dog and onto her. And I get that, like, Eli Roth is, again, proud of himself for referencing, like, Elizabeth Bathory or whatever. But I don't think that that little sort of historical reference or that sort of horror geek reference is enough to justify a really unpleasant, mean-spirited sequence. And I know that there's a school of thought when it comes to horror movies that, like, horror should be horrifying, that it should be unpleasant, that it should be awful.
That definitely occurred to me when I have these thoughts. But,
right. Yeah. And so maybe I'm being a hypocrite, because while I say, like, don't dismiss movies just because maybe it's not your taste, maybe I shouldn't dismiss a scene like this because it's not my taste, that I can take horror up to a certain point, but when it gets so awful like that, I can't. Maybe that means it's being effective, but I have a problem with it.
In addition to that scene as being part of, like, as we have discussed, the mean-spiritedness, I think I really have a problem with what the second one, with what the second Hostel has to say about how you reconcile yourself out of a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare. I'm not a very, like, audible film watcher. I don't, like, talk to the screen, and I don't really cheer or cry or do anything. I enjoy movies and I watch them, and that's about it.
Hmm.
I don't even really ever clap or anything. I think people who do that are kind of douchey, but anyway, that, all that being said, the first time I saw the first Hostel in the theater, when Jay Hernandez grabs that guy's hand and starts sawing off his fingers and kicks the door in and it hits him in the face, it just came out of my 19-year-old body watching the movie. I went, oh yes,
yeah, it's gratifying. It is.
It's really gratifying, and it's really pretty triumphant. And like, because the guy is just such a creepy scumbag, and he has established that over, you know, they give him two scenes in the movie that he talks to the, you know, the character Josh before he is revealed to be a, you know, one of these guys who pays to torture these people. But he's just, and that makes him all the more calculating and really menacing. And so when you see him get what's coming to him, it is really triumphant, really harrowing. Mm-hmm. And then he is, you know, done with that. And then he gets on the train, presumably to safety. Cut to the beginning of Hostel 2. Again, going back to one of the reasons I loved Hostel 1 so much was all the patience that it had before it gave you something scary.
Mm-hmm.
How there's like a good 20-minute stretch before anything really bad or graphic happens in Hostel 1. And then at the beginning of Hostel 2, you have like a stabbing and a beheading in about 5 minutes.
And that's something I can never forgive Hostel Part 2 for. I tend to hate that in any sequel, and horror sequels are notorious for doing that. If you survive in one movie, naturally you have to be killed off in the next. And that's just – that's and again, so maybe stupid.
As you said, maybe he's referencing that trope in horror movies, but I really don't. I don't think he is.
I think that Eli Roth thinks it's terrifying that they can get you anywhere at any time. And like, fuck that. A, I don't want to know when I watch Hostel, when I feel some sense of like relief that Paxton has gotten away, that he's just going to die in the first 10 minutes of the next movie. I don't even have a problem with, I mean, the scene in the hospital, it's a nightmare. He wakes up, he's sweating, he's terrified. I thought, if you leave it there, I'm okay with that. Because what it's saying is, he's fucked up for the rest of his life. He's going to be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life. So he hasn't really escaped it. And I'm okay with that. But then to have him murdered, I just thought was so stupid and cheap. And again, has the wrong idea of like what's scary, to me anyway.
Yeah.
The movie kind of fucked up right from the beginning for me.
And circling back to my original point, I mean he gets offed, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, you know, so the person who we thought could get away of his own, you know, by his own accord, and by doing, you know, the thing that's right, or well, I mean, I guess right and wrong kind of go out the window when you're talking about movies like this, but
right.
Whatever. you know, but I mean, he's so anyway, he's done for. And then the only way that the protagonist of Hostel Part 2, Beth, can sort of get away, you know, in quotes, is to be one of them, in a sense, you know? I mean, they have to let her go by, you know, her, you know, fulfilling their contract that they have. And I think that that's darker than I'm even really ready to contemplate. In a way, I mean, that's a really bold choice, and I'm not going to say that, oh my god, it's just bad because I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that that's what I'm really referring to when I say it's like mean, in a way that, or not even mean, if very pessimistic. Compounding that fact is the notion of this is just what all that bugged me the first time, and it definitely bugged me now. The notion of just having a character who has like anonymous infinite wealth is just really lazy.
I totally agree, but anyway, you know, I mean
that's pretty obvious, but
I totally agree with that the resolution is lazy, because they've established sort of in a vague way that she's incredibly rich.
There's like a grand total of two lines of dialogue that establish that
she's super rich, and wouldn't you know that that pays off, and I'm still coming to terms with it for the end of the movie. But part of me agrees with what you're saying, but part of me actually kind of likes it, because I think it ties back into, at least sort of, not that the movie is particularly satirical, but I like this notion that it's just a business transaction, that what they're offering doesn't matter. It just so happens that this is what the market calls for. That people want to be able to torture and kill anonymous tourists. But it's just a business transaction. They're not necessarily particularly invested in what they're doing. And you know, when you consider what's going on right now with this whole sort of Occupy Wall Street thing, I think that Hostel Part 2 does sort of say something about
consumerism, or
or just the advantages afforded to the people with means that she is allowed to live and escape because she's incredibly wealthy. And without that, she's Wiener Dog, she's Bijou Phillips, she's Josh from the first movie, she's, you know, part of that 98% or whatever that is that is fucked, you know. But because she's part of the 2%, she skates. And I think that there is something to that. I do think, you know, that for as many problems as I have with Hostel Part 2, I do think that it has some things on its mind that maybe a lot of horror movies don't have. Unfortunately, you know, it's that sequence which doesn't totally work, but like I said, I like some of what it's trying to say, is immediately followed by something that's incredibly juvenile and stupid, which is just, again, this bloodlust, this need for revenge that, oh, hey, that woman who is the one who sort of drew them into the hostel in the first place.
Oh, yeah. That's...
She hasn't been dealt with yet. So let's call back the bubblegum kids and let's have her just beheaded. And I think that goes against the point that was just made with Beth, because now Beth is just a straight up murderer, you know? And it's like, oh, it's justified because that woman got her friends killed or whatever. But like, that's horseshit.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I think it negates the point that was made earlier. And I think, were you just going to say that they were sort of trying to recreate that scene with Paxton and the Dutch guy in the bathroom stall?
Well, not exactly that, because it's not the exact parallel. I think the scene that they're trying to recreate is when he is driving the car,
mm-hmm.
and he runs it over the two girls and the right. guy who sent. That's the scene they're trying to recreate.
Yes,
and that works so much better in the first one, because I almost forgot about that creepy guy with the mole who sent them to the hospital, who sent them to the hospital in the first place.
Right,
and you're like, oh my god, yeah, that guy. Like, and again, that speaks to what I said before about the sort of wide range of this thing. You're like, oh my god, of course that guy's in with it too. But yeah, I mean, it works a lot better in that one, because I feel like they did a better job of making those girls who lured them in. Well, first of all, it works a little better because they're like horny college guys and they're hot girls.
Mm-hmm.
It's maybe I'm being chauvinistic or something to say it doesn't quite work as well when it's a hot girl seducing other hot girls.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm being gender normative, and for that I apologize. but again, just from a narrative, I mean, you know, it doesn't quite work as well.
Well, and again, in the first movie, it was almost sort of serendipitous that he happened to see those two girls in the street and be behind the wheel of a car at the time. And it was like, oh my gosh, so I'm going to run them over. Whereas in Hostel Part 2, I mean, the movie has to straight up double back just to deal with like a loose end that it hadn't dealt with.
She sets up like a Home Alone trap.
Right, exactly.
The bubble. Yeah, no, it's weird.
Micro machines everywhere.
My goodness. Since we're getting, I think, towards the end here, I did want to say, and I apologize for not, this may derail our whole conversation, but there is one thing that I really wanted, that really strikes me about the sort of things that the first Hostel does with tone.
Okay.
That I really enjoy, and that is, and by tone I mean just like, you know, creating a certain atmosphere of like weirdness around the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was only reminded of it because we talked about how he killed off the two girls, and that is those two girls. I believe their names are Natalia and Svetlana.
Mm.
I feel like I'm really redeeming myself for the Erik Christensen debacle. But anyway, you know, they are. You know, they're played by very attractive actresses who are very, very enticing and serve their roles well. I mean, you wouldn't say they're great actresses, but they certainly do what they're supposed to do in that movie pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
In that they're very attractive and they're very provocative. But there's the one scene where Paxton, when everybody is gone and he like seeks them out and he mm-hmm. finds them and you the scene I'm talking about, he finds them in that weird sort of shady bar and he demands to be taken where they are. And my God, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but there's a really palpable thing they do with the brunette girl, Allie. And she is the more radiant of the two in my mind.
Sure.
But she is a really beautiful woman, but they do something. She has this really weird, though not overtly obvious, makeup change.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm being, if you think I'm being like digging way too deep.
No.
Like her eyes are like really sort of like washed out and she kind of, she doesn't have the same amount of makeup on. She looks kind of like dingy and just scary. And it's like the bloom is really off the rose. And it's a very subtle thing.
Well, I think they're made
so well to the deteriorating situation. And I did not expect that from a movie like that. And right. That is part of what I love about the first Tom.
I think they're made to look like they're strung out on drugs, which if you're going to really analyze it from a narrative perspective, again, it gets a little too sort of explanatory in terms of this is they do what they do so they can get money to buy drugs, or they're provided with drugs as payment for doing what they do, and so I don't like that. But I think what you're talking about is absolutely true, that it is an incredibly unsettling scene when you're watching it. The experience of actually watching it feels off and weird and ugly and kind of gross, and it speaks to this idea that boy, everything that came before was this weird illusion. I was living in the Matrix, and now right, and now I'm in the real world where these women are not beautiful and want to fuck me. They're just sleepy and in this dark, awful place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, yeah. it becomes clearer than it ever has been that something. I mean, if it wasn't already clear that something is really wrong.
Yeah. You know what scene I think does that even better is like, I don't remember if it's immediately after or if it comes before, he goes back to the hostel where he met the two women, and it's two new women.
Oh my God, yes.
And they say the exact same stuff. And that scene I really like, that it's
yeah,
the scenario is playing out again. I love that they say the exact same lines, but it's two totally different women.
Again, sort of what I was saying before. I mean, you just sort of get the vague sense that it's this really enormous and elaborate operation, and it's cyclical. And if you fall into it, I mean, if you even think about going there, you have already fallen for it because you know, you're just sort of doomed to it. I it's a movie that I will continue to watch repeatedly. And I guess I'm really sort of taken by what you said regarding Hostel 2 in terms of the things that it has to say about the type of people that survive this. And I don't disagree with you. Like, I didn't mean to say by levying that criticism, I didn't mean to say like Eli Roth's just a mean guy with mean shit on his mind. I think he's like trying to tell like a really bold story that maybe I'm not really ready to deal with. And you know, for as much as I really dislike it, I can't say with certitude that I won't watch Hostel Part 2 ever again. I mean, maybe it will strike me differently a different way, but
I think that's probably giving it too much credit. I mean, I think, again,
I don't know. I
think he has things on his mind, but I think the majority of that movie doesn't work. And I don't think it's necessarily things that you are missing or that you are not yet prepared to confront. I think we are pretty right on in terms of our criticisms of the movie. I just think that there are flashes of ideas or flashes of perhaps a better movie in there somewhere. And I wish honestly that he would make another movie, a new movie isn't
Hostel Part 2, his last movie. That's not the Grindhouse.
Right.
Like, and whatever.
Right. Yeah. He did the Thanksgiving trailer, which is great, but then that was it. So he's made three movies and two of them are hostile and one of them I don't really like. So I'm curious to see what his next movie is. Supposedly he was working on something more science fiction oriented and less horror based. For a long time, he was supposed to be doing a Stephen King adaptation. He was supposed to be doing Cell. And apparently that just completely fell apart. I don't know. He had a bunch of different projects going at once and now I don't hear anything. So
I thought he was attached to the box at one
point. He was, yeah, he was.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the last thing I even heard him attached to, and he didn't, yeah.
Right, Richard Kelly ended up doing that. So I'm curious to see what his next movie is, because I want to see, is he the guy that made Hostel, or is he the guy that made Hostel Part 2, you know?
Yeah.
Which way is his career going? But we will see.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Alex.
Thanks. It was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, if there are somehow people who have, you know, sort of dismissed, you know, these movies as, like you said, just not being really worth seeing because, you know, that they're just, you know, the torture porn genre. I mean, yeah. I think they have a lot more to say than that.
I think the first one is definitely.
Definitely the first one.
Yeah, I think the first one is definitely worth seeing. You could probably skip the second one. But remember, you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I think I forgot to give the email at the top of the show. Visit our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. Don't forget, you have a few more days to take part in the F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge 2. And everybody, enjoy the rest of your October. We'll talk to you maybe once more before then. Alex, do you have anything to say to take us out?
Yes, I prefer to use my hands.
Whoa!